Happy Father's Day. As I look out over the audience, kind of like Dave, I see this whole row of guys over here, teenage guys over here that are about to be grown. And look over here and see the Oliverios and the Doziers and one holding a little boy, one holding a little girl. And I was noticing a few moments ago that we got a dad here. It's about, what, 6'3" or 4" and more? 5". And his hand nearly covered that little baby girl. And it's an awesome, awesome thing to think about that God has trusted us with something like that, isn't it? And the responsibility, if we stop and think about it, is just nearly overwhelming. But God tells us that He's not going to leave us alone to our own devices to know how to do the job the way He wants it to be done. There's a 19th century nursery rhyme that some of us heard growing up that sets the stage for how we're supposed to feel about girls and boys. And it goes, part of it is actually the part that most of us heard was a couple of verses out of something that was much longer. It carried various titles over the years, but most often it's entitled, "What Are Little Boys Made Of?" How many of you heard it? Almost all of us, haven't we? What are little boys made of? Snips and snails and puppy dog tails. That's what little boys are made of. What are little girls made of? Sugar and spice and everything nice. That's what little girls are made of. And we all smile real big. And I hate to be the one to bust this 200-year-old myth, but I'm telling you it's a lie. Little girls, in case you don't know it, can be meaner than a junkyard dog. They can be meaner than little boys ever thought about being. You can look at a little boy's face and you can tell exactly what he's thinking. You can look at a little girl's face and you don't have a clue. You think you know what she's thinking. For the vast majority of my adult life, I've lived in a house with 5 girls / women, and I know some stuff. Just ask me. 5-to-1 is pretty tough odds to wake up to every morning of your life, I can tell you. If I had the money that I'd spend on hair products, makeup, and perfume, I could spend the rest of my days on a cruise ship from this day on. For those of you who are unfamiliar with the fairer sex, sometimes just take the time to just slip up behind a group of little girls and listen to what they're talking about. And slip up behind a group of little boys and just listen to what they're talking about. It's different. I mean, little boys are talking about trucks or balls or something, or they're wrestling on the ground trying to, you know, establish the pecking order here. And little girls, what they're talking about, I can tell you this, it ain't sugar. And if it's spice, it's pepper. They're talking about one of their little friends who's not present. And what they're saying is not very nice. Now, I'm telling you the truth. You know, it may not go down too well today, and it's not very politically correct, and I understand that. But I'm saying to you, and I want to say, all this has been said somewhat tongue-in-cheek, even though there's some truth in it. I want to tell you that it's tough being a man in today's society. It is tough. Everywhere you turn, if you look at how men are portrayed today, it's tough. It's open season on guys. And there are lots of folks doing lots of shooting. You can say anything that you want to about a man anywhere, anytime, but you better really, really be careful what you say to or about a woman. Am I telling the truth? It's happening that way. And this is not just resonating with the guys. You ladies know that it's true also. Women are portrayed as smart and sensitive and capable and powerful, and men are portrayed as bumbling, abusive idiots. I mean, we've got one channel, I won't say which one it is, it's pretty much dedicated to men, you know, the problems that women face because men abuse them. And it's just movies after movie after movie after movie about it. And in all honesty, there are some women, there are many women who are smart and capable and sensitive. But there are also men who are smart and capable and sensitive. And for the record, even though I know it's politically incorrect, I want to say that I'm proud to be a man. That doesn't make me in any way better than a woman. But God chose to create me as a man, and I'm glad He did. If I was a woman, I would be glad that God chose to create me as a woman. And I hope that you are. Whether you're a man or a woman. I think the saddest, most pathetic figure that I've ever seen in my life is a guy who decided God made a mistake and should have created him as a woman. And we're having more and more of that. I mean, how pathetic can a person be? And the world does not know what being a man really means. And if we're taking our cues from the world and from our peers, then you'll probably never know what a real man that God designed is supposed to look like and act like. One of the keys to success in your life as a man is to figure out which role in your life is the most important. Because you're called on to wear numerous hats. Women are also, but this is Father's Day, and I'm talking to us guys. And of all of the hats that we wear, there are some that are obviously more important than others. And we really need to figure out which ones are the most important. And the world doesn't tell you. The world does tell you, but it tells you the wrong ones. And we only get to go around one time in life. And there are some things that we just can't afford to make serious mistakes about. We've got to get it right the first time. And we need all the help that we can get, don't we? And as we hold that little girl in our hands or that little boy in our hands, then we need help. Because they don't come with a manual, do they? Well, in a way they do, but not in the way that we think of. In all the areas of my life, as I look back on my life, then I have to tell you that being a father is at least one of the very most important ones. And I will also tell you that it's also one of the most rewarding. The great rewards of my life at this point are my children and my grandchildren. And I have one set of them that will be here the second service, Lord willing, but guys, I want to spend a few moments today talking to you about your role as dad, and it's going to be my gift to you as Father's Day. And it's kind of like tuning through your radio, and you get all this stuff. You know, it's just stuff after stuff after stuff, and it's all vying for your attention. But you're looking for something, and you think, and in your mind, you think, when I hear it, I'll know it. Well, that's kind of the way this is. The world is telling you a lot of stuff about how to be a dad and how to be a mom, how to be a parent. But we really are looking for something that really, really rings right and true from the one who created those boys and those girls and entrusted them to us. And so just a little check. I'm not going to say anything that's going to be just, you know, outstandingly knock you off of your feet, whatever. Probably most of it you will have heard. But we need some course checks along the way, don't we? We need to be reminded of some things just to make sure that we're on course. And so I'm going to ask you five questions, kind of as a dad checkup this morning. The first one is, does your family have a stable value system? Does your family have a stable value system? Most people in the world don't. We're flying by the seat of our pants. And if we are really honest, then in many homes, it's the children who rule the homes. And we find parents arguing with their children all the time. And the children are not sure who's in control. Well, actually, that's not true. They're pretty sure who's in control. And it's them. And they've learned the tactics that if they argue long enough and use just the right tactics, then mom and dad are going to relent if they just keep at it and are persistent enough. Does your family have a stable value system? Our society builds marriages on the insecure foundation of romance. And at very best, that's a weak foundation for a marriage. And it doesn't last very long. And we go to marriage seminars, and the folks involved in it are trying to get us to put the romance back in our marriage as if that's the most important thing. I'm not saying, ladies, that it's totally unimportant, but I'm saying if that's what you build your marriage on, then you're going to keep trying to push that and force that, and it's not ever going to really be the kind of relationship that God wants. There's something more stable. When romance springs out of something more stable than that, it's a lot better than if it's something that has to be forced. The Bible pictures marriage as an irrevocable act, a commitment that not only comes from the heart, not only involves the emotions, and it certainly does, but it involves the will. And that, the Bible will call that a covenant, and God's really, really serious about a covenant. When you make a covenant, God will tell us repeatedly through the Bible, fulfill your vows. And we know of illustrations in the Old Testament where somebody made a vow, and even sometimes it was a foolish vow, but yet God expected him to fulfill that vow. And when you stood before God and you promised and you made a vow before God with that woman or with that man, ladies, then God expects us to live up to that vow. And it's not always going to be easy. There are going to be some really, really rough times. God didn't create any two people who are just perfectly in harmony. You think you are when you're dating, but you're not. And there are things that you're going to have to work through. And you better learn how to work through them quickly, and you better learn how to work through them with the right attitude to come out with the right result that God wants us to. Do you realize that, at least generally speaking, we spend a lot more time talking about divorce than we do marriage? And that's a dangerous thing. In 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 14, and before I quote this to you, I want you to understand that I know that there's a broader context for this, but it certainly is applicable. It says, do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. And I'm asking you, how many of you impress on your children that when it comes time to choose a spouse, a husband or a wife, they need to be looking for a Christian? They need to be looking for someone who has the same value system. Or rather, do we argue about that and say, well, there are no guarantees in life, and you're right. And look at so-and-so, they married a person that's not a Christian, and it turned out well. They, you know, that their husband or their wife became a Christian, and that's true, and you can find those. But the Lord gives the general principle, and you don't want to take the chances. Be not unequally yoked together with an unbeliever. And while that does have a broader context, it certainly also applies to marriage. Do spiritual matters take precedent in your home over academics? Do they take precedent over athletics? And do spiritual matters take precedence over entertainment in your home? What kind of moral system, value system do you have? How stable is it? Do your children know for sure where the boundaries are and how they're to act? Here's a little parenting tip. The Old Testament book of Proverbs might almost be called a manual on parenting. In case you didn't know that, you need to make a little mental note of that. Because of the 915 verses, 209 of them, almost a quarter, are about rearing children. And it tells parents to teach their children the dangers of sexual experimentation, the dangers of violence, the dangers of rebellion, the dangers of bad language, the dangers of criminal behavior, the dangers of financial mismanagement and disrespect for authority. That's not too bad, folks, for one little book. You might ought to read it. I recommend it. And so, when we establish strong families, then they must rest on these solid foundations of having moral principles that stay the same from the beginning to the end. Second question, and you would know this one's coming, how well do you communicate? And guys, we do. We do need. I know we've been hammered over the head about this, but we do need to be reminded about communication. Because we're just not real effective. That's not one of our areas of expertise. Now, we like to think it is, and in the business world, some of you have gotten very proficient. But it's a lot more important that you get proficient at home with your wife and with your children. Relationships die when people don't spend time communicating. That's just the way it is. They don't just continue on, and you can't just leave and come back, days, weeks later and pick up and expect things to be the same. They're not. Communication is necessary. I have to say I've always felt a certain amount of envy for missionary families. There's something really interesting about missionary families. And now I have a daughter, and the one that will be at the second service, she and her husband were 5 years in Brazil. And what I have always said about missionary families is true of them. There's something about being thrown into a totally foreign setting where you don't even speak the same language. You're trying to learn another language. The culture is totally different. There's something about that that causes a family to pull really closely together. And while it's not an absolute, it's generally true that missionary families are really close families for their whole life. Now, you just check that out, and see in the future as you come to know missionary families or as you think about them and see if that's not true. I'm not saying it's always true, but I'm saying it is generally true. Communication in lots of families has become kind of like a dialogue of the deaf. Nobody's listening. Everybody's talking. Every individual is setting forth his or own ideas about how they feel, and they're justifying themselves and accusing everybody else, and nobody's really making any effort to understand anybody else. And I see it all the time. And I also know that when I sit down and talk with couples and they're having struggles in their life and you start talking about communication, then without fail, whenever you suggest to a husband or a wife, maybe you would consider doing this, you know what they always say? I already do that. And you ask their husband or their wife, and you know what they'll say? They never do that. Somewhere along the way, we're convincing ourselves that something is happening that's not really happening. At least quite often it's not. It's all about caring and understanding each other. A willingness to express and to listen. And you can put 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 4 through 8 right here in this context. It's a passage that we're all familiar with that talks about love, but it's amazing how many contexts it fits into, and it fits really nicely into talking about husbands and wives communicating and communication in families. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. Now, we're talking about, you think about the communication that takes place in your home. It is not rude. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. How are we doing on our communication in the home? It keeps no record of wrongs. Any of this sound like communication between husbands and wives? Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices in truth. It always protects. It always trusts. It always hopes. It always perseveres. Love never fails. How well do you communicate, dads, in your home? And by the way, you think that silence is not a communication. You're just not going to talk. It's communication. It's powerful communication. And it's generally negative communication. Whenever one of you clams up and won't talk, and you think, at least I'm not doing any damage, you probably couldn't do anything that would do more damage than just to clam up and not talk. So how's your communication in your home? Number three, third question, do you affirm and support each family member? One thing that we all know, when you go out into this world, and we've characterized it as a cold, cruel world, and it is harsh out there, isn't it? It's tough. I mean, the world just chips away at you and who you are, doesn't it? And we need some place where we can go back and somewhere where we can be accepted, some place that we don't have to put on a show, some place that we don't have to keep some kind of a facade up, some place that we can be ourselves and we can be loved and accepted and affirmed. And that place is a home. And we particularly as dads have a responsibility to create that environment for our children. Even when they fail. Even when they make mistakes in their life. One thing about the prodigal son in a foreign country, and he did some really terrible things and some stupid things. But you know what? He knew he could go home. Now, he figured he had a whipping coming, but he knew he could go home. You will get frustrated with your children over the period of rearing them, but don't ever tell them they can't come home. I don't care what they do. Don't ever tell them they can't come home. Because regardless of how serious mistakes they make, don't you want them to know that if they want to straighten their life up, they can come home? I don't care what they've done. I don't care if they're murderers. Don't you want them to know that if they want to get their act straight, they can come to you? But if you tell them, if you do that, don't you ever come home. Don't do that. That's a bad mistake. Don't even do it in joking. Don't bluff and don't threaten with that. We have to be able to come home and know that we're going to find love there. Maybe not acceptance for our actions, but we're going to find love there when we get there. And acceptance, at least for who we are. Encouragement and support brings out the best in others. And wives and husbands and parents, if you're not pleased with the relationship that you have right now in your home, then here's my advice to you. Quit criticizing. And you will say to me, I don't. Yes, you do. Quit criticizing. I watch parents go almost every time they go to their child to say something to their child, they've got this scowl on their face and they're coming after that kid. Now, if you were a kid, wouldn't you want to get away from that? I mean, wouldn't you want to get out of that situation as quickly as you could if you were always being hit? Now, there's certainly a time for discipline. And Lord willing, we'll talk about that in the future. And I know that you're familiar with the purpose of discipline and how to administer discipline. But we need affirmation in our homes. And we need to know that we're someone that's valuable and we don't need to always be criticized for everything. And then number four, are decisions made fairly in your home? The passage that we read says, fathers, don't exasperate your children. Romans will use a very similar one. It says, don't provoke them to anger. You know how you do that? By putting down rules that are not fair and that are unnecessary. It's one of the ways that you do that. In your home, don't have any rules that you don't need. But when you have a rule, enforce it. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. You want to exasperate a child? Then tell them no and then let them argue you out of it. You're going to be arguing for the rest of your life. Don't say anything to your child if you don't mean it. And if you say it, enforce it. I'm telling you, this is a way that you can simplify your own life and make your home a lot more pleasant. But I see so many parents that we just tell our children something, say, don't do that, or you're not going to do this, and it all starts. And everybody just wants to run out of that place. Because misery is going to prevail until you allow yourself to be argued out of it. And if they know if they can win or not. Are decisions made fairly? When you make rules in your home, then be willing to sit down and communicate those rules clearly. Let those rules always be up for review. If your child thinks that rule's unfair, then sit down and talk about that. Let them be able to come to you and say, Dad, I think you're being unfair in this situation. Okay, tell me why. Let's talk about it. I'll listen to you, and I'll make a decision. You're not going to always get what you want, but I will listen to you, and you'll be heard. That's a much more positive way to communicate and to accomplish things. Are decisions made fairly? And let me say, young people, because everybody else is doing it is not sufficient reason for you to do it. It's not. That's not a good basis to make a decision. But bitterness and rebellion are fostered if that rule or that judgment is not based on a definite moral value that is lovingly explained. There are lots of changes that occur in every family. Every morning you wake up, things are different. They've grown a little bit more. They're thinking something different. Families who remain committed to unchanging values and virtues and are yet willing to say yes whenever possible will be strong, loving families. That was the rule that I tried to follow. I haven't been consistent my whole life at all. I'm still not totally consistent in everything as much as I try to be. But Janice and I sat down and knew that there were lots of things that our children were not going to be allowed to participate in that most of their friends were going to participate in. And so we sat down and talked about this early in our parenting. And we agreed that when we could say yes, we would say yes. But when we said no, we meant no. And we stuck by that. And then fifthly, are conflicts resolved promptly? There are going to be obviously conflicts in families. The difference between healthy families or one of them and unhealthy families is not whether conflict occurs. Conflict occurs, doesn't it? Conflict will occur in families. It's whether or not you let the sun go down on your anger. It's whether or not you let those things remain unresolved for prolonged periods of time. Does everybody have a chance to be heard in your home and given honest consideration? Dad, be honest now. Can you admit to being wrong? Or do you just automatically deny it? Jesus Christ was the only guy who never did wrong and who never made wrong decisions. You make some wrong decisions, and so do I. And you need to be able to say, that was a bad decision on my part. You need to be able to tell your child that. If you made a bad decision, then you need to be able to say to them, I made a mistake. I'm apologizing to you. I'll try not to do that again, if you'll forgive me. And you know what? You're going to find that child's attitude completely changing about your rules and about your authority. Because sometimes we make some bad decisions, dads. And if you just try to cover it up and act like it really was a good decision, you're messing up. I mean, just be open and honest about it. How's your family doing? Need some changes? Then it's up to you, Dad. You're the head of your house. God gave you that responsibility. You're the leader in your home. And he told you to lovingly lead. He said, love your wives like Christ loved the church. How does Christ love the church? He gave himself up for her. And that's what we do for our families, don't we? We lay our life down. And that doesn't just mean dying. I mean, this dad over here would be willing in a heartbeat to die for that little girl in his arms. And that's as it should be. But that's really not the hard part, because you probably won't ever have to make that decision just exactly like that. But you will have to make the decision, will I give my life? Will I give my time? Will I give my energy? Will I take the time to listen to what the Lord says and change my attitude in my life to become the kind of dad that's going to take his family all the way home? And you know what? That's what I want to do. That's what I want out of life. I mean, really, when you get down to it, that's pretty much what I want out of life from this point on and for a long time before. John Drescher, in a little book, If I Were Starting My Family Again, tells of being almost asleep one night when his three-year-old little boy came into his room and just stood by his bed. And Drescher asked him what he wanted. He said, "Nothing, Daddy." And then he said, "I wanted to crawl in beside you and talk a little." And so he pulled the covers back and his son crawled in the bed. And there was a little silence, and the little boy said in a moment, "Daddy, it was fun holding your hand in front of the lion's cage today." And the dad agreed, and he said, "Were you afraid?" And he said, "A little bit." And there was another pause, and the three-year-old said, "We really had a good time to get together today, didn't we, Daddy?" And then the little guy, his dad said, "Sure, we sure did, son." And the little guy threw the covers back and ran to his own bed and went sound asleep. And Drescher said, "But I remained awake for some time. My small son had awakened in me anew the importance of taking time to be together as a family. Relationships. It's not about money and things, is it? It's relationships. These are what healthy families are all about. And it begins with our relationship to God. Dads, it begins with our relationship to God. Your kids are taking their cue from you. And all this stuff about do what I say and not what I do, it's been a lie from the beginning. It just doesn't work that way. That's a cop-out and it never did work. Your family is looking to you to teach them how to live. And here's my question to you. Do you want your son, your daughter, to go where you're headed right now?" While we stand and sing.